Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, headquarters for all things beef cattle. I'm Taylor Grusing, SDSU Extension Cow-Calf Field Specialist. With the end of the year getting close and harvest wrapping up, we're gearing up for a variety of events coming up across the state and region for producers to attend. We hope that you make time to attend some of these in person or online, and let us at SDSU Extension know if we can help you create plans, answer questions based on your year-end operation assessment. So on today's episode of Cattle HQ, we're going to be visiting with Dr. Randy Culbertson, Cow-Calf Extension Specialist and faculty at Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa. And we're going to dig into some of the genetic resources available for producers, such as EPDs and genomics, and how they can use them to create a genetic roadmap for their operation. So without any further ado, let's get talking. All right. Joining us today on the Cattle HQ podcast is Dr. Randy Culbertson, Cow-Calf Field Specialist at Iowa State University Extension and Outreach in Ames, Iowa. Before we let her introduce herself, we want to bring to mind a couple of events we have coming up in South Dakota. One would be our Cattle HQ Live, which is more of a webinar series that people can register for, watch those webinars, and join in on very similar topics. So our one coming up here in November, it's November 20th, and that one is on cow-calf vaccinations. And then the one in December will be on December 18th, and that is calving season preparations. So we'll have those couple things we're looking forward to, but also the reason we're invited Dr. Culbertson today is because she has a genetic symposium coming up in Ames, Iowa on November 19th and 20th. So without any further ado, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, give us a little bit of background, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, first of all. And I am, like you said, Dr. Randy Culbertson here at Iowa State University. I am the cow-calf extension specialist for the state and faculty on campus. My background is in breeding and genetics, so I got my graduate degrees at Colorado State University. And originally, I'm actually from New Mexico, so I've lived in the West and along the mountains for the majority of my life until I moved here to Iowa. So little bit of a different landscape when I moved to Iowa. So, but I've enjoyed it. I've been here for about 3 years now and, just living the life here in Ames.
The 3 years probably flies by pretty fast with all the research you guys have been doing.
It does. Yeah. It feels like yesterday I started, but when I look at the calendar, I'm like, oh, it's been 3 years. So it flies by.
Great. So with your breeding and genetics kind of background, bringing this new genetics symposium to Iowa State starting the last couple of years probably was something you're pretty comfortable doing. So tell us like how that got started and what kind of some of your first thoughts were of why you wanted to bring this event to Iowa Extension.
Yeah. So when I started here, you know, obviously I came in with a genetics background and looking at some work that the Beef Center had done, doing some like, you know, they did some listening sessions with their producers here in the state. And one of the things that came up was some more education on genetics and selection decisions, or, you know, mating decisions. And so I decided, well, why don't we go ahead and put together a genetic symposium and kind of hit those topics. But I also didn't want to saturate it. So what we do with this symposium is 1 year we focus on genetics. And then the next year we rotate and focus more on reproduction. And then we kind of rotate back. So this year we just keep the title Genetic Symposium just for consistency. But this year we're focusing back on genetics, and then next year we're actually going to tie in with the Repro Task Force. They'll be here in Iowa next November, so we'll just tie that in with that meeting next year.
Okay, good to know. Yes, yeah, so we just visited down there at the Applied Repro Task Force meeting in North Platte this last, I guess it was over a month ago now. So very applied information coming from that meeting, and then maybe merging the two will kind of bring those really applied reproductive topics to the forefront and then have a little bit more genetics focus, which would be great. And So it sounds like something people can attend every year. They're always going to get new information.
Yeah, so we always try to have different speakers coming in, and I try to find speakers that, I think genetics is sometimes intimidating for producers because it can be a lot of information coming at them. And as researchers, sometimes we like to talk in our research language, and sometimes we forget to, translate that. And break it down so that it's actually applied and usable, so it's something you can take to the farm. So we work really hard for the symposium that this is information that we're providing to producers that they can take home and actually apply to their operation. So our format for our symposium, we do a noon to noon meeting. And so the first day will actually start, technically we kick off at 1 p.m., but registration opens up at noon. And we usually open up with a panel. And the panel is people from industry. So people working for companies. The first year we had bull buyers from the semen companies talk about what they look at when they are looking to purchase bulls. This year I have representatives from some technology companies, the big genetics companies, and just talking about some of the technologies they have and how they can, how that technology has been used in the beef industry and how they've seen that evolve over time. And then from there, we kind of go into some breakout sessions, and that's where we have speakers giving talks. I got great speakers this year. It kind of came together at the last minute. So I've got Jessica Peterson coming in from University of Nebraska. They've been doing some work on a genetic mutation that was causing high drops in some Simmental cattle. So her lab really worked on investigating that and tracking that down. And so she's going to come in and talk about genetic defects and what producers really need to know about that. I'm going to talk about the basics. I call it the ABCs of EPDs. So if you are somebody who feels a little uncomfortable about EPDs and want to know a little bit more about it, I've got a session for producers who maybe want to dive into that a little bit more, or if they have never heard of an EPD before, come to my talk. And then we've got a representative coming in from Angus, Devin Jacobs, and she's going to talk about their new maternal EPDs. They just released that this year, so they've got some maternal EPDs. She'll give kind of the lowdown of that and how they develop those and, how to use those. We also have somebody coming in from Simmental, Elizabeth Dressler. She's going to talk about why we still phenotype. So I think there's been a lot of conversation that now we're genotyping. Do we still need to be collecting phenotypes? How do we use that information? So she'll talk about that. Jamie Corder from Missouri is going to come up. They've done a lot of work on genomics and validating it in commercial herds. And then Mark Anderson, who is executive for the Limousine Association, he's going to talk about he has kind of a unique perspective. He comes in with a feeder background, but he's been doing a lot of work in that, with that association and how they are kind of implementing all these genetic tools and how it can really benefit on the seed stock and on the feeder side as well. So I think he'll have a very interesting talk and some good information for producers. So, and then that evening we have dinner, and our keynote speaker is Marty Rapp, and he comes in with a great background and just talking about, again, how do you utilize these tools and just kind of his perspective on how we use that. So I think the first day's got is packed with lots of information, great speakers. I'm kind of bummed I'm talking myself because I would prefer to go see everybody else speak, but we also most of these speakers, we use that from past attendees. So they said, this is what we want to hear. So we try really hard to kind of bring those people in. So that's just the first day. So the
Wow,
second
that is a
day,
lot.
it is a lot. But the nice thing is the first evening, we do have a really nice dinner. It's brought in by the Iowa State Meat Lab. And a really great time for everybody to socialize a little bit and network. So a lot of times the meetings are pretty intense. And what we found is if we do the noon to noon meetings, that dinner time provides a lot of valuable networking for producers. So they can talk to other people, not only just people from industry, people from companies that might be there, but also other producers around the state. The speakers are usually there milling around as well. So they you're a little nervous about asking a question during the session. You can still chat with them afterwards. So great time to network. And then we have a fun, we try to have a fun activity in the evening. So we're going to do a simulated feeder calf sale. And so every table will try to bid on a group of calves. And then we're going to see how that really works out with the money you spent on those calves at the auction and how they actually perform, because we've got closeout data on some of those calves. So we're going to kind of do a comparison for that. So that should be fun. And then the next day we open up with a what we call our technology showcase. So bunch of companies coming in. We've got some demonstrations on how you collect tissue samples for DNA testing. And also we pulled some samples on some of our teaching herd heifers, and we're going to have a keep cull demonstration using that genomic information that came back from those heifers. So I think it's a real practical, hands-on use, because a lot of times people get that information back and you're like, what do I do with this? So we have kind of a practical hands-on with that. We've got some strategic, mating decision tool that we have somebody coming to demonstrate how he does that. And he uses genomics to kind of better align, better decide, what bull is really the best bull to be mated with your cows. So he'll be there to do a demonstration. And then Gallagher will be here talking about their animal management tools. And 701X is an ear tag company, and they also have a herd record keeping system as well. So they'll be here talking about their technology. And then the Beef Center, we actually have a like a AI simulator model that we will have. And so we'll have that out as well. And that's going to be most of our winter programming. So we'll have that to demonstrate that, and kind of it's its first time out. So we'll see how that goes. But that's our morning. And then we're going to close out with a producer panel. So producers from the state who have used this technology and the good, bad, and the ugly. So they're here to tell us how it is. And so we'll close out with that. So a lot of information packed into just, 2 half days. But like I said, I'm pretty excited about this lineup. So
So that is a lot of information. So thank you for running through that. And so looking at it from a producer perspective, can they come just to one day or another? Or just even if the evening session is something they have to go home and do chores and come back, but if they couldn't, they could still attend half of the meeting potentially.
Yes. It's, you can come in if the afternoon of the first day, you just that's all you can really attend, that's great. We try to make it so that everybody wants to come back on the second day. But yeah, I mean, if you that's, life gets in the way, right? So sometimes you have to pick or choose. But yeah, it's you can come in and come and go as you please. So
So let's back up a little bit, all the way to your talk, like you said, talking about the basics or the ABCs of EPVs, right? So, from a 30,000 foot view, what would you tell someone if they're just getting into genomics or genetics, excuse me, where do you even start when evaluating EPDs?
Yeah, that is a great question. So, I always tell people if you're confused, give us a call, right? We've got great field specialists that can help you. There's myself. I'm always happy to pick up that call because they are confusing, right? They're these numbers. How do you interpret it? What does it mean? And so when I talk to people about using EPDs, the first thing I talk about is have a breeding objective. So if you have a herd and you're trying to make a decision, make genetic decisions, have a roadmap of where you want those genetics to take you. Because the important thing about genetics is it's going to happen at conception. And if you are keeping replacement heifers in your herd those genetics will be in your herd for a very long time. So you want to be really thoughtful and intentional on what decisions you're going to be making when you are trying to decide what traits you want to improve. Because sometimes it can be hard to turn that ship around. If you get down a road and you're like, oh my gosh, depending on the trait, if you're trying to make a correction, it's going to take a while. It's not going to happen overnight. So have that roadmap out and really think about what it is that in your operation that you want to make improvement on and what timeline are you looking to do that. And then from there, so then you've got this roadmap. You're like, okay, these are the traits I want to work with. Then it comes down to actually looking at your EPDs. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. You can go into a website, a breed association website, you click on that bull, and suddenly you've got 20 EPDs that you're looking at, and you're trying to figure out how the heck to sort through all of that. And that's where having that roadmap of knowing what's important for your operation is really important. That's crucial. And so remember things to keep in mind as EPDs, they're a tool for comparison. So if there's two bulls you're interested in, put those bulls up side by side and compare those EPDs because they're a tool for comparison, not really a tool to say, hey, this bull's got, X for weaning weight. That doesn't mean that's going to directly be passed on to the progeny. Because A, we've got genetics coming from the cow side as well, but we also have variability in which genes get passed on. So you want to keep in mind that that's an overall average of progeny and how that's going to compare. And other tools to keep in mind is your percentile ranks. How do those animals rank within a population? And depending on your risk level, accuracies for the EPDs. So, especially with as we go into calving, I give a lot of talks on, I call it the genetics of calving. And so, if you're looking for a calving ease bull, keeping in mind those younger bulls are not going to be quite as accurate because we don't have as much information. So, information really drives these EPDs and how we determine them. And so, if you are having some problems with calving ease and a lot of dystocia, you probably need to put a little more pressure on finding bulls that have a little more information on them. And that's where the genomics really comes in because that really bumps up that information. So we get information on young bulls that we used to have to wait generations to get from progeny. So the genomics has become a game changer in that realm for sure.
I was gonna say that's a great segue into why genomics, I think, have really improved the use of EPDs, even just in the private sector of, individual bull sales that are already starting here in November. They seem to be coming earlier and earlier, but whether they're 12-month-old bulls, I mean, some are 11-month-old, 18-month, even to 2-year-olds, I would say, depending on your breed, majority of people are trying to utilize those tissue samples. Which also make it a lot easier to collect some of these the DNA to be able to send into genomics. So, going into that, you mentioned, several speakers coming from several different breed associations. How do we look at EPDs across breeds, not just within a breed, but is it possible to use them across breeds?
Yeah, and that's it's a conversation that's a little bit up in debate right now. But so if you are trying to look at a, let's say, a Hereford and an Angus, and you're trying to make a comparison of which bull you want to use, so we can't directly compare those EPDs because they're two different genetic evaluations that generate those EPDs, and they're different population of animals that really drive those EPD numbers that we see. So the USDA Animal, Meat Animal Research Center in Nebraska, they publish a table every year, and they are conversions for EPDs. So not only do breed associations calculate these EPDs, but they also do a base adjustment to these EPDs, and that's not standardized across breed associations. So what US Mark has done is they go through and they've provide a an adjustment. So you can go through and the Angus is always the base, and you can pull up the table. Beef Improvement Federation also publishes that table as well. You can go in, pull up this table, and it'll tell you the difference of the other breeds in comparison to Angus. So Angus is always going to be a zero on that table, but you'll see that you will add whatever number it is. You drop down to your breed of interest. So if it's a Hereford, you'd look up the Hereford, and then you take that number and you add it to the Angus EPD. So just keep in mind, if it's a negative, you're going to be subtracting that from the EPD. But yeah, so that just helps us. And then, which case you have a tool for comparison across those two breeds.
Right. And that can be helpful if people who are doing kind of a two-way or a three-way rotation, especially folks making those F1 Baldies, when they're selecting whether it's a live bull or even just semen to AI animals to want to make sure they have those numbers, that either correlate or make sure they're still picking a Cavingese Hereford bull, even though his numbers might be a little bit different than the Angus EPDs that they're looking at.
Exactly.
So the last thing you want to do is get the phone call of, oh, I accidentally used, the cow bull and the heifers, and hopefully that never happens. But if it does, we can, kind of look at, like you said, the parentage of, how many traits are coming from the bull side. Maybe there's some Cavingese genetics coming from the female side, and then we'll be able to manage that accordingly. And then also kind of when you look at your bull battery, if you have a penna bull standing there and you want to change breeds, that would be another instance where, genomics might come in handy, right?
And like I said, making those comparisons, it's always been a challenge in our industry across these different breeds. We do now start to see some multi-breed genetic evaluations. So it's called International Genetic Solutions, or IGS. And so they publish EPDs for Simmental, Red Angus, Limousine. I know I'm missing a big Red Angus. But really, a big group of breeds. It's a partnership of about 23 different breed associations across the US, Canada, and New Zealand and Australia. And those EPDs are directly comparable. So if you're looking at a Simmental to a Red Angus, you can directly compare those two. The challenge is if you're looking at a Simmental to an Angus, you're going to have to use that US mark to make that adjustment to get those EPDs directly comparable. And because the problem was, how do you use that table from US Mark if you're looking at a composite bull? That has always been kind of a challenge in the past. So IGS is now it's multi-breed. So it's kind of providing, if you have some of these composite bull type things, kind of gives you a little better tool for that comparison.
And when you're looking through catalogs, the breeds have averages published as well. You might not necessarily see a huge change in those averages from year to year, but circling back to your accuracy numbers, for those younger bulls that are, the new ones, and maybe there's specials on them, for example, just making sure that they still fit within your herd goals or those objectives, like you're saying, is important. So if you're looking for a heifer bull, there's only, I mean, there's lots of heifer bulls out there, but you're gonna have to maybe break it down a little bit farther. So two things you could look at would be obviously your maternal versus your terminal sires, and talk a little bit about maybe those and how indexes can help with evaluating EPDs as well.
So let's start with just our maternal traits, right? So what are a maternal trait? So if we look at something like, let's say, Cavingese direct and maternal. So Cavingese direct is the genetics that that calf inherits directly to itself for calving. Cavingese maternal is what the daughter is going to inherit. So when she is a first calf heifer, those are the genetics to help her with calving. So it's a little bit confusing. You got all these numbers and you got direct. So direct is directly go into the calf. Maternal is what the daughter is going to inherit from the sire, and that's what she's going to carry on for her ability as a replacement and as a cow in the herd. Now, when we think about our terminal traits, that is those we're putting a little more focus on animals that we are assuming are going to go into the feedlot. They are terminal, so we're not expecting them to be replaced as replacements in the herd. So a lot more focus tends to be put on the carcass traits when we have those terminal traits, and really putting focus on how are they going to finish out. Marbling tends to be a big thing that we look at, ribeye, and just that feedlot type performance. Weight is, weaning weight, yearling weight. There's a lot of emphasis on that. And then that, of course, leads us into indexes. So we talked about how if you go through and you look up a bull, you're going to open up a page and you're going to have 20 EPDs that you somehow have to make sense of to put everything together. And, we could just pick one trait and select on it, and you would make very fast improvement on that. But unfortunately, our traits don't work independent from each other. So if you are increasing your weaning and yearling weights, unfortunately, you're going to be increasing your birth weights, which is going to affect your calving ease. So your calving ease is going to go down, which you're going to start maybe seeing a little bit harder, maybe a few more incidences of dystocia. And, you're also, if you're re keeping replacements, your mature cows are going to get bigger and they're more expensive. They're going to take more feed to maintain, especially through winter. So I never advocate single trait selection. Okay? The dairy industry is my poster child of when things work and sometimes when things don't. So they single selected for milk for years and they did a great job. They make a lot of milk. But unfortunately, they forgot to pay attention to some other traits, and now they're having to backpedal a little bit to kind of balance things out. In the beef industry, we have a lot of things we need to balance when we're really thinking about, because at the end of the day, we want to improve profitability. That's decreasing our inputs, increasing our outputs. And the indexes are a tool that we can use to do that. So an index is a tool for multi-trait selection. So we're taking all of these traits and we're saying, okay, what are economically relevant traits that are going to achieve a terminal, let's say if it's a terminal index. So we want to choose a bull because we're going to put all of our calves in the feedlot and finish them. Maybe we'll retain ownership on these calves. So that index is going to take all the traits that would contribute to calf performance on that. And it goes through and it looks at the emphasis of those traits. And I hate using the word weighted because sometimes everybody thinks, well, it's the weight of the animal. But really, what we do is we take the economic importance of those traits and we combine them together. So a trait like marbling tends to have a high economic importance when we're selling animals on the grid. So that has a heavy influence on those terminal indexes because it's got a very heavy economic value to it. Same thing with growth on these animals as well. So those are included in a terminal index. Our maternal indexes, and sometimes we call them our all-purpose indexes. Maternal is going to focus on if you're keeping replacements. Our all-purpose is looking at the entire system. So you're keeping some replacements, but the rest of the calves are going into a feedlot. Maybe you're retaining ownership on them. In which case, now we have to start thinking about if we're keeping replacements, now we got to start thinking about those maternal traits and what kind of milk are we going to be producing out of these cows and things like that. So you got to balance that into it. The great thing about indexes is it kind of balances all those things out and looks at the economic importance of each one of those traits, and it provides you one number to make a decision. So it really helps to put it all together so you can make a decision of which bull is going to contribute to what your objective is. The one thing, the downside of indexes is it's not a one size fits all. And that can be kind of a challenge. So what I always tell producers is, decide what you want to achieve for your breeding objective. Look at those indexes. Every time an index is published, they should be also explaining the traits that are going into the index. They won't tell you those economic values that go are associated with it, but they're going to tell you these are the traits that are in there. And so you want to keep track of that because you might have to consider, is do you want to maybe you're concerned your milk is getting a little too high or your mature cow size is getting a little bigger than you than what your resources can really accommodate. So then you have to pay attention. Oh, well, mature weight is maybe not in this index, but I'm concerned about it. So that's something where you want to, so I say use your index, rank your bulls, but then look at those bulls and make sure you check those traits that you might be concerned about to see if they are over a threshold that you're really comfortable with. So it's kind of a tandem selection, but it really is probably one of our better tools for multi-trait selection. And you can move things forward quite rapidly using an index and towards basic overall improvement in your herd.
I think indexes are a lot less daunting too than
Exactly.
looking at each of those 20 individual EPDs. And you might not have an index that's perfectly fit to what you're looking for, but it's usually going to get you in the ballpark of picking, 20 Angus bulls down to maybe even 10, and then
Right.
starting to dig into those 10 a little bit farther. So hopefully you can find one or two you want to try. And as we started the conversation at the beginning, like you said, when you start with your breeding objective and you start making these decisions at conception, it's going to stay in your herd a long time. And that's the goal, right? You want something, your
Yeah.
best and your newest genetics to stay in the herd for as long as possible. But let's say and if it doesn't, let's say something goes wrong, right? You don't like what you see. There's still time to, change that decision before, too far down the road. Obviously, it takes us 9 months to get a calf on the ground, and so some of those decisions are going to be a little bit more delayed, but that's why probably continual review of your breeding objective is important.
Yeah, exactly. You should always be reevaluating, right? You want a roadmap that's going to kind of take you down the road and say, this is where we're going. But as you're going down that road, you need to be paying attention. Do I need to tweak this a little bit? Do I need to make a little change here? This is working. This not is not working. And so it's always an ongoing process. I
And
mean, if
there
it
are
was easy,
tools,
everybody'd do it.
right. And it's genetics is a daunting task to start out with, but there are tools to help you through it. So maybe you can explain some of those, whether it's US Marks tools or, in industry, are there ways to select, I want an Angus bull with an average calving ease EPD, above average weaning weight, let's say we're looking for that curve bender. Are there tools out there to help us find that?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of tools out there, so the breed associations try, for the most part, they do a pretty good job of providing tools. So you can go on, even the genetics companies, like the semen companies, they've got tools where you can go on and do a search, depending on how you want to conduct your search, right? But you can go through and, like you said, let's say you want an Angus bull. It's going to be used on some older cows, but you're still a little concerned about calving ease. You can set that threshold and say, I want to only see the bulls that meet this threshold. And then you can say, I need to increase weaning weight. And so you can go through and they have tools and you just click on what your criteria is. And then they're going to publish the bulls that they've got available. Now, the breed associations, sometimes you're going to get all the bulls there. And some of those bulls might not be attainable one way or the other. It might have been dead for 5 years or it might be outrageously expensive, right? I like to say I must have really expensive taste because I usually find the really expensive bulls. But so you got to moderate a little bit. That's one tool to help you select. It's typically based off of your EPDs. Other tools is, we talk genomics, of course, is a big topic. And that's become really important for a whole host of reasons. It helps us with these younger bulls, higher accuracy. We have more information on them before they even have calves hitting the ground. Helps us correct the pedigrees. We've all been there where you swear that calf went with that dam and that cow, and nope, somebody switched at some point in time, or, if you have a multi-sire bull pasture, you can identify which bulls these calves came out of now. So that parentage has become really important. And then that just actually makes our EPDs more accurate because the information's more correct. But also genomics can be used, let's say on your female side, if you're a commercial producer, and maybe your animals aren't registered. So how do you know what the genetic makeup is of your cow herd? And if you've got a group of heifers and you need to make some decisions, so that genomics can be really helpful to help you make decisions maybe a little bit earlier. So genomics has also helped us making decisions for traits that are not measured until much later in life. We can use those genomics to kind of help us make those decisions. And that's been a very powerful tool that we can use. So, the advantage is you just take a tissue sample, send it in, you get your answer back. Whereas with an EPD, you have to collect the information. Typically, you have to register the animal, you have to send it into the breed association, then you got to wait for them to turn it back around to you and all of that. And that doesn't fit everybody's operation. So, the genomics have really helped step into that field, to that kind of that area where registering animals just wasn't really feasible, but the genomics can step in and provide information at a genetic level to be used. They're not as powerful as an EPD, but they're still much more powerful than just trying to without anything, right? So they're still a powerful tool. And so it's just all, we're just adding layers of what we've got for tools that are available to us. So, and use your resources. If you have a breed that you've been using, you can call the breed association. They have people there to answer questions that you might have. The other thing is if you are buying bulls and you've got a, if you've got somebody you've been working with, go and talk to your breeders. They do a lot of work in collecting of that data, and they can help you out. And if it's a really good breeder, they don't have the answer, they'll help find the answer for you. So developing that relationship with who you're buying your bulls from is really important.
Right. And on that commercial testing side, you don't have to have, the DNA on the dams or, the sires. You're using it more towards that breeding objective. So, for example, using it on a pen of replacement heifers,
Right.
and getting that data back and putting it towards kind of a maternal test, it'll hopefully tell you, a ranking of those, let's say, 100 heifers. Maybe these are the top 75 you want to breed, or use a certain bull on if you, have a different genetics that you want to use, and maybe these are the lower 25%. And so those kind of decisions are helpful as long as people use them, right? So
Right.
the key to all of this, is using it and having those conversations with your bull suppliers, your female suppliers. And so I think also back to the your symposium, both sides are going to be well represented. It's not just a bull symposium, it's not just a female symposium. You're bringing in industry folks to talk on both sides of that. Extension folks, are going to be able to help navigate those conversations too.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, we try to balance everything out. And I think our first symposium 3 years ago, that was a bull focus. So we really focused on the bull, like what decisions would you need to be thinking about, what tools are out there. And now we're talking more about what are the tools, how do you use those tools? And especially now we're starting to see a lot of genetics companies popping up. And so I think it's really important to understand how the genetics and how these tools really work, because there's nothing worse than having somebody use it and they didn't understand what the tool was. And so they spent a lot of money, but they didn't understand it, so they didn't use it quite correctly, right? And so then it's, then they're frustrated because they spent all this money and there was nobody there to help understand, or they didn't use it. And so it's at the end of the day, it was a waste of money. And so that's something that I tried, you know, and I have conversations with producers and I'm like, you know, I don't think this is the tool for you, you know, and it's not nothing against that producer. It just doesn't work in their operation. So we have to be aware of what every operation and where they're coming from and how they want to use the tools, because they're very powerful tools. They're very useful, but you have to use them correctly.
Right. And kind of along those lines, let's talk a little bit about heritability. I think that's one thing we maybe skipped over just a little bit. And I know it can get kind of fuzzy in that as well. But when you're doing multi-trait selection, hopefully, or using indexes, you know, there's certain heritability ranks of those, and how you can hopefully make fast progress if you stay consistent, but some are going to be inherited more than others. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so let's start with the definition of heritability, right? So heritability is the ratio of what's controlled by genetics and what we consider to be, you know, of the phenotype you see, what of that phenotype, how much of that is controlled by genetics. So heritability runs on a scale from 0 to 1. You're never really going to see a heritability of 1, okay? Because that really just mathematically, it just doesn't really happen. Of the traits that we really measure, there's always some sort of environmental influence on that trait. So, you know, a highly heritable trait could be at about a 0.4 or 0.5. And, you know, you might think in your head, well, that doesn't sound very high. But that actually, if you think about it, it's a trait that the combination of the environment plus the genetics gives us what we actually see. That phenotype that we see. So a 0.5, that's 50% of that's controlled by genetics. And that's a lot of genetics that are behind that. So our highly heritable traits in that like 0.4 range, we're going to see things like some of our growth traits. Speed intake can sometimes be in that realm a little bit. Sometimes it's a little bit lower in a kind of 0.3 range. And marbling's a highly heritable trait as well, which is how we've managed to make a lot of progress on those traits quite quickly. So if it's a trait that's got it's got a higher heritability, that means that we can make genetic progress on those traits very quickly. So we can hit the gas pedal and we can go with it. And so, if you look at genetic trends for marbling, especially for the Angus Association, it's just taking off. It's really increased quite dramatically up over the last couple of years because the industry put a lot of focus on it and they made a lot of selection and have moved on that. Other traits, like our reproductive traits, are considered to be lowly heritable, also health traits. And if you think about it, a lot of those traits are controlled by environment. I like to use the example, if I go out and synchronize a bunch of heifers and then I don't follow the protocol, I shouldn't be shocked that maybe not everybody got pregnant, right? Or if we have a drought, things like that, that's going to affect your pregnancy rates. So, you know, they're lowly heritable. So people are like, well, should we even think about making genetic progress on it? It's lowly heritable. I like to use the example that, well, you know, just think if all your management was perfect, but you didn't have the genetics there for fertility, you're going to be fighting an uphill battle. So you still want to put prog or put some pressure on that. And even, you know, the progress is going to be slower because it's lowly heritable, but you don't want to ignore it completely. And, you know, when we're looking at these traits, that's the other beautiful thing about those indexes is they kind of balance out that you're going to have more heritability on some traits than others. And so it tries to balance that out. And some of our all-purpose indexes that you'll see, they'll have a lot of pressure or a lot of weight or economic influence on traits like cow longevity, because those are very economically relevant traits for cow-calf producers. They're lowly heritable traits. So you want to put a lot of pressure on those to try to increase them. And it's a slower progress, but we can still make progress on them. You just have to be conscious about making those decisions.
Right. It's never a good idea to ignore one, like you said, or even, you know, select against it. But if you want to just moderate it, I think that's usually a good method to the madness, right? We
Yep.
can't look at everything, but keep milk moderate or frame score moderate, but let's go after a little bit of higher reproductive traits, like you said, that maybe stability or longevity type of things. So if it
Right.
was easy, all of our cows would get bred every year and we wouldn't have to worry
Exactly.
about replacement rates. But
Right, exactly. And we could be stricter about who we wanted to keep and who we wanted to get rid of too, right? But
right.
sometimes we're kind of like, oh, she's kind of a marginal cow, but if we're struggling with getting some pregnant and stuff like that, sometimes you're kind of stuck with those marginal ones until you get it, get those pregnancy rates back up. So, and something else we didn't really discuss was genetic correlations. So we have some traits that are genetically correlated. Sometimes that's antagonistic, meaning as you select for one, we see a decrease in the other one. And so it's a challenge to balance those out. And so you want to, feed intake is a prime example. We want to decrease feed intake, but as animals get bigger, biologically, they need to eat more. So they're going to have a higher intake. So how do you balance that? If you have feeder calves, if you're feeding your own calves out, you would like to decrease that efficiency is a challenge. And so again, indexes kind of step in and help us with that. So they put a weighting factor on it because we still want them to gain. You want to find that animal that can gain the most. He's going to probably eat a little bit more, but you don't want them eating you out of house and home. So the indexes kind of help you balance that so you can still capture the value of a animal who gains really well, puts on a lot of weight without, and he does it more efficiently than the next one.
Right. Yeah, I can't forget about our end goal, which today in the beef industry is pounds of beef,
Yeah,
right?
that is true. Yep.
Pounds of beef going to the rail, but also keeping those pounds of cows productive on the acres that you're growing. So if you have the opportunity to put selection pressure on fertility, you hopefully would get more cows that are going to breed every year. And if we could control the environment that gave us perfect grass every year, those cows would stay around. But we know we have those drought impacts, and too much rain sometimes can impact it just as poorly as drought as well. So
Exactly. Yep.
keeping that environmental factor in mind when we go to select genetics is something that we're just going to have to ebb and flow with. But the EPDs will follow those guidelines and get you hopefully on the right roadmap.
Exactly. Yep. Have a plan. At the end of the day, have a plan. Know where you want to go, how you want to get there, and then use the tools to help you get there.
Perfect. Awesome. So just one more question, I think, as we get close to wrapping up. If you would advise a new producer starting a herd, who are some of the first people you would have them talk to, whether it was, local or across the nation?
Well, I'm a little biased since I'm an extension person, so I'm going to say, of course, reach out to your extension person. I mean, that's our job, right? Is to help you, is to provide producers information. And we come from a place where we're not trying to sell anything other than the fact that we just want you to have good information to help you with your operation. So get to know your extension people in your area. If you are buying bulls and or just buying your breeding cattle coming in, do your homework. And I know it's hard if you're just starting out and you're like, I don't even know where to look. We've got lots of resources. So we've got extension, but there's also sources. We've got a website called ebeef.org, and there's a lot of really good resources on genetic tools. We got lots of fact sheets there and a whole group of people. We all are geneticists working in extension. And you can reach out to any of us there. And we're across the country, all the way out in California to here in Iowa, down to Tennessee, all over the country. So you can always reach out to us, and we're happy to answer questions. Beef Improvement Federation, it is a has a meeting every year. If it happens to be in your neck of the woods, I always recommend to go. Lots of great information. It's a producer and scientific meeting, so it's kind of the crossroads of the the researchers and also the producers who are using those tools. And I'll tell you, the conversations that happen in the hallway at that meeting are, great conversations, a lot of great information to take home. So those are some great resources from a genetic standpoint. Again, if you are interested in a specific breed, the breed associations typically have people on staff to help you answer those questions, especially if you are looking at an index. You want to know more about that index, so you can always reach out to the breed associations. And but like I said, I'm going to push extension, so always reach out to extension. We are here to help.
Right. And like you said, this symposium that we talked about a little bit was born from questions or ideas directly from producers. So
Right.
they take the valuable input that they receive every year and make a symposium, hopefully the next year or continual years, that people will want to continue to attend because it has that applicable information. It has the new relevant information, like so many new companies coming out, where you even start. And so
Right.
hopefully if they attend, they'll be able to find some tips and tricks, whether it's with herd management, technology tools, or back to the basics. Sounds like you'll be able to cover a little bit of everything. And like you said, that networking opportunity at the end of the first day is a great time for you to not only meet people, but just bounce ideas off of people that you might not get to sit around the table with every single day.
Yeah, so the symposium's the 19th, 20th here in Ames, Iowa at the Hanson Ag Student Learning Center. We have a website. The website is a little bit convoluted. It's extension.aiastate.edu/genetic-symp. But an easier way to get to it is just go to your search bar and type in Iowa Beef Center Genetic Symposium, and it'll pop right up.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time, Dr. Culbertson. This has been a great background for me and update on EPDs as well. We're gearing up for AI school season here
Oh
in
boy.
at South Dakota. So we have a bunch of genetics questions probably coming our way with some of those once we get people trained in AI school. So as of today, this has been Cattle HQ, headquarters for all thing beef cattle with SCSU Extension. Until next time, eat beef.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ. Brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.